Welcome to What's Your Story Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Story. On this pod, I sit down with people of color leaders to understand how they've been able to use their superpowers to make an impact on our world. And I do it one story at a time. Okay, so my guest on the pod today, by title, is the Chief Diversity Officer and Head of Corporate Responsibility at Visa. But those of us that had the chance, the good fortune to actually meet her and engage with her know that she's much more a force of nature, and she will leave you inspired and more importantly, smiling after spending time with her. So with that intro, I want to welcome Michelle Gethers-Clark to the show.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time. Before we get into a lot of the questions about your amazing journey, I always like to start with just hearing a little bit about what was little Michelle like?
Well, you know, quite frankly, I view myself as a product of the American dream from humble beginnings, right? So, you know, I start with little Michelle even before I was born. You know, my parents grew up in rural South Carolina during segregation. So they had limited access to education and what we might call a quality job. So they got on that Greyhound bus to New York City for opportunity known as a place to live and a job, working for the government. So I was born into a family experiencing poverty, but they had the hope that things could change. And so as little Michelle, I was taught three things. The importance of family, faith, and education was actually the ticket to win. And if you can believe it, little Michelle was shy. But then I figured out how to focus in and zoom in on my education and being of service to others. So that's a little bit about little Michelle.
Wow. Yeah. And it definitely lays the groundwork for, I think, how your journey would evolve. But when you were growing up, did you have an idea of, you know, the proverbial, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Yeah. You know, I was a little girl who loved numbers. We didn't live in the era where people per se said, you can't do math the way I hear it's being said now. So I wanted to be a mathematician. I didn't know what one was, but I figured it had math in it.
Yeah.
So I was going to go ahead and do that. So I was a little girl. And I remember my aunts and uncles used to say, does she know how to spell that? She's going to be a mathematician? But I was serious.
That's great. That's great. So, you know, a lot of times as we think about, you know, going out and getting a job or starting your career, we're sometimes going into uncharted territory for, especially for many of us that don't necessarily grow up seeing that firsthand. So, you know, as you mentioned your parents' journey and, you know, even just mentioned some of your aunts and uncles, how do you think your community prepared you for going out into that big corporate world?
Yeah. You know, Matt, to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't know what a mentor was. And I don't think that people who were acting as mentors back then, I don't think they gave themselves titles. Instead, they just did. So I'm a product of junior achievement. So I went to junior achievement, and junior achievement was very different than the model that they use today. Actually, they were teaching you all of the traits of being an entrepreneur. They didn't call it that. Right? So I went to junior achievement. The name of our business was called Unique. And a bunch of us from high school, we went once a week and we worked with two people, Bill and Carol, who were executives, which I did not understand, at the telephone company before they broke up the Bell Telephone Company. So I'm dating myself a little bit. And they were determined to teach us the ins and outs of business. And because I love numbers, something clicked. And I said, wait a minute, profit, loss, cost of goods, raw material. I was like, oh, I like this. And they saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And they sent me to a class. They said, Michelle, here's the address. Go to this class. It was Dale Carnegie Public Speaking. I get there with a backpack on, And I'm in this room with people with suits and ties and skirts and dresses. And I'm this kid, I'm a 16-year-old. And I'm like, what is this about? And I said, surely I'm in the wrong place. But I had already ridden the subway there. So I said, well, I'm just going to sit down. And they knew my name. So I was like, I guess I'm supposed to be here. And that launched this idea that I had a voice and that I had to use it. And they taught me how to speak in a way that got my audience to my desired conclusion. So if I wanted to inspire them, they taught me how to speak inspirationally. If I wanted to persuade, they taught me how to speak in a way that was persuasive. And that was the beginning for me. I then went back to high school and I said, are there business classes that I could take? Because remember, at home, I didn't have anybody who had been on this journey. Mm-hmm. But what I had was people who wanted me to succeed. And so there was this magical combination of things that really became my community. They were untitled. It was their character that I followed. And so one of my mantras today is people follow character and not titles.
That's really powerful just to hear and how you were able to kind of use those experiences to build on one another. And I think it's really powerful to think about the fact that, like, literally and figuratively, they put you in the room. And from there, you were able to take those lessons and then use them to your advantage, as you said, to go back to your school environment and ask different questions mm-hmm. that you probably would have asked had you not been in that room. And so it's just that idea of people opening doors and putting you in rooms, I think it is just really, really powerful. And it's something I know you still to this day, you do and have done for so many people.
Yeah. And that's the ticket to win, right?
Yep.
You
yep.
cannot be what you have never observed, what you don't know about. It's hard to be that. And so many people get to observe early in life. And there are some of us who have to observe because someone sees something in us and decides to bring us along. So, you know, I really take it as a personal responsibility to whom much is given, much is required. And so I really try to give back what has been so freely given to me.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with someone about this, and it's kind of like an unlock in your career. When you get to that point where you realize your impact can be so much bigger
right.
by infusing and pouring into other people.
Yep.
And when you get out of that individual mindset of how do I do this or how can I move up the ladder, like you said, how can I chase that title? And you think about it from the impact of like, how can I pour into this person so that they can not trip up on the things I tripped up on, or they can they can accelerate faster than what it took me to learn that. Like, your impact is so much bigger. And the earlier you realize that, I think the more beneficial it is for you individually. So it becomes, it doesn't sound selfish, but actually is selfish because it helps you.
It really does. But, you know, so many of us have a mindset of scarcity. Mm-hmm. But when you have a mindset of abundance, you actually know that there's enough for all of us. And that's how I view life. I'm like, wait a minute, there's enough for all of us.
Yeah.
No need of me hoarding. So I really try not to be a hoarder of experiences, of opportunities, of stuff. I give freely and I will give my last. And I learned that from my mother. She would give her last. She would give her last. And I realized that when I have given my last, I've been richly rewarded tenfold because that person I gave to actually needed it more than I did. And then I get it tenfold some other way.
Yeah. So we could spend probably hours going through your career journey and learning from kind of the various stages. I'm going to accelerate it a little bit faster because there are some other things I want to touch on with you.
Okay.
But you know, you worked at American Express for in a number of roles, making your way up to SVP and general manager. And, you know, obviously you learned how to navigate that, what we would refer to as a ladder, even though we know it's not a ladder. But I'm curious, like, what did you learn or what did you take away as you made your way through that organization to such a high executive level?
Yeah. You know, there are some key lessons. And the first one is being right is not everything. So often we stand on what I like to call the platform of I am right and you are wrong. That is a useless thing in corporate America, because there's this power of collaboration and there is this power of maybe you could learn something if you decided that you were not always right. And I had to learn that as a 26-year-old. And I'm just really glad that I learned it early in my career, because I'm a numbers person, my math was right. And people were, they wanted to get in vicious debate. And I'm like, the numbers are the numbers, right? You know, I would shut down and be like, you could talk all day long.
Yeah.
But you know, I got reprimanded one day because I was right. And I said to myself, why am I being ostracized when I'm right? And it was because the way I went about being right was wrong. And that was a reckoning. And I said, being right is not everything. Sometimes I need to allow the environment to learn on its own, that my job is not to force, even if you have the right answer, onto someone else. Maybe that they have to go, you know, up and down and all around to get to the same answer. Mm-hmm. So that's one critical lesson. And then the other one is the power of collaboration. I'm way better when I'm around people who are of different generations, different backgrounds, etc. I am much better. And we're all better. And so for me, I learned how to do that very early. And before I knew it, I was in leadership roles. I revere people. I'm always willing to listen and teach and learn. And it just propelled my career, you know, and relationship building. I don't burn bridges. Even if we don't get along, I'm not going to burn the bridge. Even if I think you're wrong, I'm not going to burn the bridge. And all those bridges have served me well. And I call myself a Frankenstein of sorts, Matt. I'm a little bit of everything and everyone I've journeyed with.
Yeah.
And there are some parts of me are things that I will make sure that I never do. I'm like, this is one thing I will never do. I learned this from XYZ and I'm going to hold on to that. And if I ever catch myself doing that, I will reprimand myself. So I'm a Frankenstein of all the good and bad I've been able to observe over these years.
Yeah, I love that, because I think a lot of times, you know, as you think about your career, you want to be an expert and you want to be a subject matter expert and you want to, you know, be the best or be known for. But in reality, true leadership comes from exposing yourself to as many things as possible, to your point, so you can know what works, what doesn't work, what I've tried, what I haven't tried, to be able to come up with that next big idea, to be able to facilitate that next big idea being developed. And it's actually a good segue, because as I was going through the different roles and responsibilities you've held, it was a bit of a Frankenstein. Like you've held so many different things in different, you know, whether it's different functional capacities in the nonprofit, also, you know, the profit space. And so I'm curious, in many of us have this idea that our career should be up and to the right. And, you know, one thing should lead to the next, which leads to the next promotion, leads to the next responsibilities, more people, more budget, et cetera. But if you were advising someone on how they should think about their career journey, knowing that you've been able to really stitch together a wide, diverse collection of experiences, how would you tell them to think about it? And what are the tools that they should be trying to leverage to make that, to plan out those steps?
Yeah. So I think, there are two tools that are of critical importance, and that is a plan. I'm a woman of faith. And so this idea that you need a plan, you need to write it down and then you run with it. People are running with no plan. They just run. Some people are running with a plan that's in their head. Yep. And they lose it because it's just an idea when it's in your head. It's not a plan. It's not a plan until it's on paper. So I believe in 5-year planning. There are two columns. There is a column for what do you want out of your personal life? And then there is a column for what do you want out of your professional life? And I think when there is not harmony between those two, one of them is not going to do well. So it's really important that you fold the paper in half and that there's a personal five-year plan and a professional one. So that's A, that I absolutely believe in. And then secondarily, I also believe that you've got to be open and flexible. So Matt, I've done 7 different things. And if you told me what my journey was going to be when I started out, I would have said, that's not true. That's not going to be my journey. But what I decided early on was, you know, Carol and Bill saw something in me that I didn't see in myself and sent me to Dale Carnegie. Maybe there are some other people along the way who might see something in me and expose me to something. So let me become a lifelong student. And I might learn something I don't like, and then I can always course correct. But if I'm not learning, I think you stop growing. And I do really believe you stop living when you decide you cannot learn anything else. So those 2 things I think are really, really important as 2 tools. And then what I did is I took those 2 tools and I said, okay, there, I knew that I wanted to be a senior vice president at American Express. But when I came to American Express, I only wanted to be there for 2 years because I was going to open my own CPA firm and I was going to be an all-female CPA firm in Manhattan. So I was very clear that I was going to be an entrepreneur. Well, let me tell you something about this thing called cash flow. Getting a paycheck every 2 weeks without having to go out and get new clients was really very appealing to me. So I said, wait a minute. I bought a car, I bought a condo. I was like, now let me think about this entrepreneur thing a little bit. So I had a little side job. I think they call it a side hustle now, running a CPA, a small practice. But then I decided that corporate America was actually scratching my itch more. And I gave up this idea of being an entrepreneur outside of American Express. And you know what I decided to do? To be an entrepreneur inside American Express. So I was very entrepreneurial. They would give me a problem. I'd be like, now if this were my business, how would I handle this? So in other words, nothing was off limits. I did the ugly projects. I did the great projects. I listened. I learned. I went to conferences. And I was just different. I wasn't following anybody's norm. I was just like, I'm an entrepreneur. What would an entrepreneur do to drive revenue? They would do everything. And I don't mean illegal. I mean legal. So let me clarify that, because I know a lot of stuff is going on. So what I also learned was, the road forward is not straight, and it is not always upward. I have accepted a demotion intentionally. I have made lateral moves intentionally. People criticize me and say, you should not let them take away your title. You shouldn't let them ask you to relocate and not give you more money or not give you a bigger title. And I'm thinking to myself, do you really think that's how the world works? This world of mine has worked out pretty darn well with these things. I took my demotion. I asked the hiring leader. I applied for a job that I knew was one level down from mine. I knew it. But the problem was I was trying to get out of accounting and get into risk management. They had to take a chance on me. Well, if they're going to take a chance on me, why can't I take one on myself? So I applied for a job that was one level below because I didn't know anything about the topic. And I said, well, I got to learn. When they realized it, they didn't realize it until they were ready to make me the offer. And they said, you know, this job is one level below. I said, yes, I know. So he said, we really want you. I said, how much you going to pay me? He said, well, I won't take any of your salary. I'll keep your salary the same. I said, you got a deal.
Yeah.
I said, I don't really care about my title.
Yeah.
A year later, I would have my title back and more money. I said, I'm mobile. I want to be an SVP. I will leave New York. My husband said to me at the time, Why would you leave headquarters? No one leaves headquarters, Michelle. The CEO knows your name. You want to go to Greensboro, North Carolina? From New York City? I was like, I got this. It's going to be all right. Because if we hate it, we only have to do it for 2 years and then I'll raise my hand again.
Yeah.
Went down there, lateral move, no change in pay, relocation. All my friends, you are crazy. There's no way I'd do that. I said, I got this. Don't worry about it. 6 months later, I was the next level up, more money. 18 months later, I was a senior vice president.
Wow.
So you can't, there's no script.
Yeah.
There's no script. No script.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about how you laid that out is you took complete control of the steering wheel.
Right.
And while you may change your destination, you always had your hands on that steering wheel.
That's exactly right.
As opposed to sometimes we can be in the passenger seat suggesting where we think our career can go, but we're letting others steer it and others right. drive it in directions that they think may be best. But you knew where you wanted to get and knew that you may have to take a detour. You may have to take an exit here or there, but you were going to get to your destination, which is phenomenal.
Right. And that was clear. And that's why I think these plans, these five-year plans are really important. They're just not a matter of paper. They're not a matter of, and it's not for anybody else's eyes. It's for your eyes only, you know, in the case when, you know, you're a couple, et cetera, that you syndicated in the household.
Yeah.
But they're not for it's not for the job. It's not for the boss.
Yep.
It's for you because you can lose sight. You know, and Matt, we both know you can lose sight of your career.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to jump on the other side of that piece of paper to the personal side mm-hmm. and get into the brand of Michelle for okay. a little bit. What would you say is your superpower?
Yeah, I'm very clear about my superpower. I have two superpowers, analytical rigor and relationships. I literally love people. I would do anything for a human being. My heart bleeds for my fellow man. Analytical rigor, I believe everybody, but I verify everything. Right? You can tell me what I'm like, sure. Even when people say, I saw this on the internet, I said, what's the source?
Yeah.
And I said, that's interesting. What's the source? Oh, Michelle, you always, I said, you're going to repeat something that's not true one day because yeah. you don't yeah. know the source.
100%. That combination is just like, it's almost like an accelerant for both of them. The fact that you have the analytical rigor, which at times people cannot be so comfortable with, but you also do it in a human way
right.
of taking the person behind it into consideration. But like, I'm sure that those two work well to amplify each other.
And they do. They really do. You know, like today I was going through some numbers and I said, that doesn't pass the gut check. I said, think about that. I said, just divide those two numbers. I said, would a company actually spend that much on a per person basis? They can't get an ROI at that rate. Mm-hmm. I said, I actually think that number, we have it in US dollars. I actually think it's not supposed to be in US dollars. Hmm. Right. And so I said, make sure you literally look at things and do the gut check first, then do the math verification. Yeah. I said, just do gut checks before you show me stuff. I said, because you know what I'm going to zoom in on. I said, I'm really honest. I tell people all the time, I'm going to look at if you put a number in front of me, I'm going to look at it. So if you don't want me to look at the number, don't put it in front of me.
Yeah, there's a whole masterclass behind that in just general being clear. Whenever you put something in front of someone, you have to be able to defend it. So
they're gonna look at it.
Exactly. So you've touched a lot of teams, initiatives, projects, organizations. Have you had a Mama, We Made It moment?
You know, so there, I think I've had two moments. And I think the moment that I was called, I went on maternity leave, Matt, and I had a really hard pregnancy. I stepped out of work in October, and I did not come back until the next year, May. That's how hard it was. And I left, and I was a second level VP at the company, and I was away for a really long time, and I knew that. And when I came back in May, on June 10th, I got a phone call that said, "Hey, I want to talk to you." And it was my boss's boss. And he said, "Look, your boss is leaving, and we're going to make you the senior vice president," which was a two-level jump.
Wow.
And I remember coming home and saying to my husband at the time, I said, "I just got promoted to senior vice president." He's like, "You're kidding." I said, "I'm not." And I remember sitting there, and you know, I had wished that my mom was still alive so that I could share it with her. And she may not have understood the entire complexity of it or the significance of it, but we would have done the hallelujah dance together. Yeah. And I think even though I was doing really well in life, it was that moment where I said, "I really made it. I made it." And then the second time that I knew that I made it is when I promoted the first person to be a vice president. Because then I knew that I was making leaders. I was promoting leaders. And that was just an incredible feeling to call somebody into your office and tell them that they are going to be a vice president for the first time. It's just those two things just stand out as I made it.
Wow. The first one makes a lot of sense. And I could see, you know, we have these experiences in our careers that we may have gone past what our parents or elders have experienced. So you kind of have to translate it, and it's still just a great moment. The second one that's just a phenomenal insight of how you're actually having an impact on another person's trajectory and being able to share in that with them. I don't think I've ever heard someone, and as many times I've asked this question, give a version that is more external focus than internal focus. That's really, really phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to tell you, Matt, I count as one of my greatest successes, beside having my fabulous children, being able to help someone else achieve career aspirations through promotions. Mm-hmm. And I consider those as my greatest accomplishments, actually, and not what I have done. It's being able to really spread the joy and to see someone else get there.
Yeah, there's so much in that, because, you know, someone once told me that your team members, their families know your name, and you can't control that. But what you can control is how they think about you when they reference your name. And so taking that even a step further of actually getting the joy and excitement out of helping someone reach their aspirations.
Yeah.
And again, it's selfish because you enjoy that. That's something that you get energy out of. That's something that you seek to do. And you know, as a leader, that's just an amazing quality, because you're obviously going to attract talent that wants to have someone have their back and support them that way. And then I think about it from the family perspective of how you're changing the trajectory of that family.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had people cry.
Yeah.
You know, and just like, "You don't know how much you're changing my family." And I lean in and I said, "Yes, I do." I said, "You don't think I do, because you actually think you don't know my story, but I know." I know.
Yeah. All right. So I'm gonna move us on to close out with a little bit of fun with our little bit of time we have left. When they turn your life story into a movie, who would you want to play you on the big screen?
Viola Davis.
I had a feeling that one was gonna be it.
I love her.
I've had quite a few people say her. So maybe one day I have to get her on the podcast and see what she would answer that with.
I'm gonna fan out. I'm just gonna be falling out.
So what song would play in the trailer for your movie?
Work That by Mary J. Blige.
Okay. All right.
Show yourself some love. Work your thing out. Stop running from yourself. Your hair, your skin tone, hold your head up high. Get on your runway.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that song just tells the story of what's really happening to Black women.
Yeah. When I started the podcast, it was really because I enjoy hearing stories. I enjoy being able to hear someone share their unique lived experiences. But for you, if there were three people that you could sit with and hear their stories, and they could be with us, they could have passed, who would be your top three?
I am very intrigued by Jay-Z. I just think the man has to be a genius. And I want to understand, coming out of Marcy Projects in Brooklyn, I grew up in Alfred E. Smith Projects in Manhattan. I would love to hear Jay-Z's story, the real story.
Mm-hmm.
I am also intrigued by Cicely Tyson. You know, there's this on-screen thing that was happening, but I think there was an off-screen that is really very deep and I think could be really meaningful. I am a royal watcher, so I want to really understand Princess Di and what she went through, Princess Diana.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really want to talk to Dr. Martin Luther King one day.
Yeah.
Because I think that we misinterpreted what he was trying to accomplish. And I really think that he was trying to fight the war on poverty. And I think it just went right over our heads. And so therefore, we are more impoverished now than we ever were, because we got fixated and thought we had reached the pinnacle when we got voter rights. And he was trying to take us so much further than that. So I would love to talk to him, because I would love to make sure that I'm carrying the mantle.
That's a great list. I also think getting from all of those individuals how they felt, it would just be phenomenal.
Yes.
Because we assume certain things, but to hear particularly how they felt when they were doing what they were doing would be great. So is there anything I didn't ask that you want to share, or anything you want to ask me?
So, you know what? I'm very curious. You are a man that has got a lot going on, and you are sharing stories. Tell me, what about storytelling is important to you? Because you know, when you do this, it's right, it's an indelible ink. It doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit about what made you start this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, obviously the last name doesn't hurt. So I kind of had that advantage of being so closely tied to stories. But I would say the one thing that I've learned in my time on this planet is the easiest way to connect to someone is through a shared story. And it's not your interest. It's not where you're from. It's not, you know, what your favorite ice cream is. But if I tell you why it's my favorite ice cream, and I tell you how I experienced it as a kid and what I went through and who I was with and what I thought, that's how you bring people together. And so it's almost, you know, we spend a lot of time in our culture, you know, reading books and watching movies and TV shows, and it's because they're stories. And it's so easy to find yourself connecting through them. But I actually think, as our society has become more dependent on technology, we're more busy than ever, that we don't take the time to do storytelling. And it's all quick, you know, bites of information and data. And I worry that we're going to get to a place where people don't know how to tell their story. And so what if I can use the platform that I've been given to help share stories for people to hear that they maybe wouldn't have heard, and to give people a chance to tell their story and to practice telling their story, or to, you know, tell it for the thousandth time, then I think there's just a huge opportunity, both for the person telling it and more importantly for the person on the other side listening, to be able to learn from it and to connect with someone that either they don't know and they wish they did, from like you said, a mentor perspective, or to be able to connect with someone that, doesn't look like you, doesn't come from where you come from, and to be able to better understand them. So that to me is the cheat code with stories.
Cool. And I agree with you 1,000%. And I thank you for having the courage to just take a portion of your life and just say, I'm going to dedicate it to making sure that stories are told. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. So before I let you go, if anybody wanted to follow your story into the future, they want to know more about where you're up to, where should I send them?
Well, there are two places that you can send them. I am an open book, and so I wrote a lot of what I think and my pursuit and my purpose in my book, The Next Level. And then the other places, I post regularly on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So those are two places where you can find out more and you can connect with me.
Awesome. I'll include those in the show notes. Well, again, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me and share openly about your experiences and your journey. It truly is valuable for me and I'm sure many others listening.
Thank you very much, Matt, for the opportunity and the invitation.
Wow. So, you know, we sometimes refer to needing to get soul food and, you know, not directly relating to the food we eat, but consuming those things that just pour into our soul. And I think that conversations with Michelle are definitely soul food. She just speaks to her unique experiences in such a human way that I've been fortunate to hear her share her story in different forms and in different formats. But every time it's like I take away a different nugget or a different gem, or it makes me think about my journey in a different way. And I just appreciate being able to learn from her great experiences. But the three things I took away from our conversation today were, one, she talked about one of her mantras around people following character and not titles. And for me, there was a duality to that, because as a team leader, you have to remember that people aren't going to follow you because of, you know, the name in your signature or the name on your door. They're going to follow you because they believe in you and they know that you are the person you say you are. And so that's the first part of it. And the second part of it is that we should seek experiences and things that test our character and build our character and add to our character versus seeking titles. She talked a lot about how she had a bit of a Frankenstein career, and she was able to stitch those different and disparate experiences together to ultimately become her best version of herself. And I think, you know, she didn't go about chasing the next title. She did have a goal in mind that was title related, where she went to get, but she was open and flexible to the journey to get there. And I think that's important. And you can obviously see the character that she has displayed over and over throughout that journey. The second thing she talked about that I took away was the power of collaboration. And there's no better way to say it than what she said. She said she is her best version of herself. She's way better when she's able to be around a group of different people. And to look at it through that lens of it's not just about having representation in a room to hear voices, but the fact that it actually makes her better. And thinking about, you know, all of us on our leadership journey, how can we become better leaders by having that diverse group surrounding us? And you know, that diversity goes across experiences, it goes across skill sets, it goes across background, but it actually becomes a way for us to be a better version of ourselves. And I think that's just a different way to think about collaboration. It's not just about seeking to work alongside someone, but it's how can you work alongside someone that makes you better? And then lastly, you know, something that I think we don't think a lot about, but she shared a great story from her coming of age and being put in the room, and the importance of having access to rooms that you wouldn't necessarily get to on your own, and not taking for granted when you're put into those rooms how you can not only learn, but how you can have an impact. And then I think the other piece, which really just blew my mind, is how she got so much joy out of putting others in the room. And she talked about her Mama We Made It moment was the first time she promoted someone to VP. And for me, that was just something I've never heard anyone focus on, an external moment where someone else was being celebrated and their achievements were being recognized, as being able to take joy and excitement out of that yourself. And it just, again, it speaks to her character. It speaks to the brilliance of how she's been able to blaze her journey. But I think that for me, just walking away, thinking about what are those moments and times where I can help others reach their achievement and then see how that actually helps me. And what are the ways that we can all get better by focusing on that? And so not taking for granted, putting people in the room and giving them the opportunity to show up and show out. Until next time, I encourage you, as always, to continue to share your story. It's so important, not only for you, but for others to hear your story. And if you have any feedback or any comments about any of the podcasts, feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me at all of the social channels at Matt E. Story, or you can go to my website, www.mattestory.com.